Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Where is he? We're searching. We're looking for him here.
We jokingly, well, we don't really jokingly. Life is a journey, right?
So yes, it is.
On a journey of discovery. Yeah, I'm on the journey of the infamous California freeway right now. Trying to make my way to the station, but it's a little funny that we talk about life being a journey, and we talk about pursuing your passion, and, you know, I seem to be pursuing a lot of my passion, but I seem to be living in my car more than my house lived recently. So
I see.
I guess, you know, be careful what you ask for. If you want life that's a journey, you're going to end up with it, but nobody says tells you that it's going to be in the car.
Yeah, right.
Josh, I look forward to meeting you here shortly. I'm almost at the station, but thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's introduce him here first. Let's tell who he is.
Please. I'm going to just say that I was very impressed. I know, and some of our listeners that I had talked to before that there are regulars. We were going to have be honored by the presence of Jerry Rosen from Working Wardrobes today.
Hmm.
And yesterday afternoon, I think Jerry had a conflict, and Josh.
She got stuck on the freeway. That was the problem. She's stuck
on the freeway. okay, so Paul, please, station manager, we need a helicopter to navigate the freeway.
I think so. We need to have ability to pick people up instantly. I'm actually going to subcontract it to Amazon because Amazon's working on these little drones.
You're going to put me on a drone, get me out there?
Just pick you up and bring you here.
That's great.
Who's this gentleman sitting here?
Gentleman is Mr. Josh Newman, and he's the founder and executive director of Armed Forces to Workforce. And I'm going to let him describe this. I will just say that I was very impressed by the bio, Josh, and it's a real pleasure to have you here. And we will look forward to having Jerry on another show, but what a treat. So if you'll let everybody know a little bit about yourself and what you have been involved in, because I'm looking at your bio, and I don't think I can do it justice, so I'll turn the mic over to you.
And we don't want you to drive and read at the same time here, so.
Well, I'm not. No, actually, it really was very impressive. I memorized all of it.
Okay. So welcome to the show, and what do you do?
Thank you for having me. So I am the founder and executive director of a small nonprofit based in the Orange County area called Armed Force to Workforce. And what we do is we endeavor to assist young veterans, typically who are returning from far away, who probably entered the military from Southern California, Orange County area, and served in distant locales. And when they come home, they have a lot of challenges navigating the civilian workforce. And so what my organization does is we try to catch them early and work with them to find bases for offering their services to employers in the area who will benefit from their skills, their talents, and their commitment.
So give us a couple examples of what those challenges might be.
The primary challenge, especially today, and I'll sort of frame it, our part of the world, Southern California, actually sends more young men and women into the military than any other part of the United States.
Really? I wouldn't have guessed that. Would you have guessed that, Rod?
I happen to live close to Pendleton. We are very much a military town down there in San Clemente, and we do see a lot of our returning vets, but we also see a lot of people that go through deployment out of there.
And Pendleton's a good point of reference. So other than Pendleton in this part of the world, there aren't a lot of active duty military bases. As a result, probably there's not a lot of military-oriented industry. So one of the challenges that a young veteran faces when they come home is that the skills and talents that they've honed in the military for, you know, during their service aren't obvious to civilian employers in this area. And that creates a set of challenges. If you can connect them early, in my experience, they are the best employees that an organization could hope to have. If you don't catch them early, As we all know, Orange County is an expensive place to live.
Yeah.
They've been through a very intense experience if they've served in the last decade. And so if we don't catch them early, a bunch of issues can build up that will get in the way of them making productive next steps in their post-service lives.
You talk so much. They talk so much about post-traumatic stress and about the high suicide rate and other sorts of things. Does that play into this?
I was going to actually say, Josh, we had a gentleman a few shows ago that is in San Clemente, actually a fellow San Clementian who has a nonprofit called Freedom Warriors. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He actually used to work for some of the. He corrected me. It wasn't fast food. It's what was it, Paul? It was quick food or
quick
something
food
like
or
that.
Something. Yeah, right.
It wasn't fast food, but basically he was involved in the hamburger industry,
mm-hmm.
and he has a place down there called Vicky's Burger. If you're ever in San Francisco.
I met him recently at an event. He's a terrific guy. I was impressed. Always impressed if somebody follows their passion that way.
Didn't he work for Taco Bell, too? I thought he was an original franchisor.
The original franchise manager for Taco Bell, and he basically pulled the old kitchen out of his Biggie's Burger in San Clemente and ended up putting it in a warehouse or an office area, and then basically started training veterans that were interested in possibly owning their own burger joint as a form of independent, you know, business ownership and, you know, kind of control of their sort of financial well-being.
Yeah, how to be a restaurant franchisee. Yeah, and then how to run a restaurant and then go find a franchise that you want to take over.
In his case, one of the gentlemen that worked for him in his office actually was a returning vet that had was suffering from post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, Josh, he caught him early enough that it was life-changing for him to kind of find that purpose and direction in something that basically was, for lack of a better way of describing it, getting back into society as a productive member. So my question to you is, what kind of ages are we talking about with returning veterans, Josh?
So it varies, Rad, by kind of type of service and tenure of service. So there's a pretty wide range. Let me start. So there's a stereotype of the young vet that we see on the beer commercial or at the halftime ceremonies. And that's a, you know, young 21-year-old kid who typically they surprise him by having their fiance trot out or he proposes to them right then.
Exactly.
And that's actually a very small minority. What you're more likely to see are somewhere in the, you know, sort of 27 to 35-year-old age range. And then depending on at what point they're leaving the service, they could be quite a bit older. The typical veteran student, which is a veteran who comes home and goes back to school, the average age there is 28. And so older than most of us would assume. The other point, I mean, Paul mentioned PTSD and some other issues that confront vets, and those are serious issues. But for the average vet coming out of the service, coming back to this area, in fact, anywhere, about 28% of those vets suffer from service-related issues or barriers that might get in the way of full-time employment once they've transitioned out of the military. But the majority, in fact, a large majority, 72%, you know, they may have some stresses in their lives, but there's nothing that would prevent them from going to work and being super productive new members of a civilian organization.
Right.
I'm going to piggyback on Paul's original question is, what do you find is sort of the educational need to the the owners or the business owners that are maybe not aware of what a returning vet can provide? Because I agree with you. I mean, I happen to be fortunate enough to have sort of a front seat down south, but I agree with you that some of the best people you can employ are actually returning veterans that have had that discipline, that have had that commitment. What do you find you're doing most of in terms of educating the rest of us of what veterans have to offer?
So what I find, Rad, is, and I think collectively, I'm a member of a countywide collaborative for veterans stuff, and I'm the chair of the employment working group for that collaborative. And what we collectively find ourselves doing is continually trying to bridge that space between the employment-ready vet who comes home typically from, like, as I said, you know, they serve in Fort Drum, New York, or Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and they get out of the service, and they have to go to a mandatory seminar that gives them a bunch of information about life after the service. But what makes no sense is they typically have to take this mandatory 5-day class 3 months before they get out, and they do it very far from where they're going to wind up. And in my experience, once they come home, very few of them have a lot of recall or the paperwork from those seminars. So they come home and they find themselves feeling kind of untethered. And so they've gone from being in an organization that not only housed them very securely, but where they were valued, where they knew their place in it, where they were very aware of kind of what their role was and what their skills were.
Right.
And then they come home to Southern California, where, as I mentioned, there's not a lot of military industry. So it's not like there are a lot of recruiters out looking for people explicitly with military experience.
Missile guidance or something. Or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly. And we do have those companies, but they don't hire in large numbers. And typically they can find their recruits some other way. And so the young vet comes home, and they might participate in public programs, but those programs need to connect them to employers who are looking for them. On the employer side, you have a lot of employers, in fact, thousands in this area, who are genuinely inclined toward the idea of hiring a vet, but at the time that position comes open, they need to hire somebody. And so if they don't have access to a pool of qualified veterans, they're not likely to find somebody within that window. And so our sort of collective obligation as a community is to bridge that space so that vets are properly oriented and prepared to go find those jobs, and then employers can find them when they're needed.
Okay, you said something. Hey, by the way, I sound better, don't I?
You do. You sound different. What? You got a better phone, I think.
No. Hi, guys.
You got into the studio. Wow, that's amazing.
Hey, Josh.
That's like the first time. This is like one of those commercials where the guy is watching TV in the bedroom, and then he goes out to the car, and he's watching on his tablet, and he goes to the work. It's following him. We had a show, or like Letterman used to do this, where he'd walk in through the audience or through the backstage, and you'd see him coming onto the set here, and then everybody'd cheer. So we should play the applause now. Rod is in the house.
Well, I do want to just give kudos to Paul, because that was the most smooth transition from one device to the other.
Yeah.
He literally just hung up on me on my phone and kind of said, pointed to the mic and
we're
said,
cool.
You're on. So, Josh, you know, I don't know that we delved into this a little bit, but, you know, you talk about, you mentioned something a minute ago, you said, but from my experience, okay? Why don't you give people a little background? Because you're not just somebody who set up this nonprofit. I mean, you're talking from being in the military.
Yeah, yes, sir. I am. To
when he says sir, I know he was in
well,
the military. Nobody says sir anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm in the room now.
Yes, sir.
He's an intimidating presence in person.
Oh, ouch.
My own experience is I enlisted in the Army and went to officer candidate school after graduating from college. And at the time, my interest was kind of vague, because when you're young, but I wanted to serve, and I served for 4 years in the United States Army. I was a field artillery officer, and I was continually impressed during that time at the quality and the talent of the soldiers in my unit. And it leaves you thinking, like, what's the difference between me or my college classmates and the kids who served my unit? And in my experience, it was probably just opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are so fortunate in the United States to have access to this pool of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And we can staff the volunteer military with amazingly talented young people. And they do an amazing job. The Department of Defense, the military, does a really impressive job in recruiting talent, assessing talent, training young men and women to do very sophisticated tasks, and, mm-hmm. and giving them a role in this very large organization that values them and takes good care of them. When they get out, they're often themselves not even aware of how much talent they have.
Right, because they're also in an environment that everybody is operating at that level,
mm-hmm.
and so they don't necessarily have a reference point of how elite in their training really is. There's two things that just kind of hit me. You know, Paul and I would talk about this all the time, and especially when it comes to veterans, because, you know, the sort of the generational situation with people coming back from Vietnam and so forth. I think we have a mental image as a culture, unless you're absolutely, you know, that side of the equation where you're, you know, military can do no wrong, the, you know, it's all about supporting the troops, et cetera, et cetera. I think there are certain people that I'm glad to see that we are not dealing with our returning vets the same way that what happened in Vietnam. And it's, you know, I have a cousin who served in the military, in the Army, actually, as well. And they were, him and his ex-wife, went to the Language Institute up in Monterey. Right, and he was a he couldn't get the classes to finish his degree, his undergraduate in chemical engineering at Cal Poly Pomona because the class cut were cut being cut and budget cuts and so forth. And he ended up in the military. And when he came out of there, he tried to get into sort of do the MBA and kind of get back into sort of normal situation, right? I've known him all his life. He's a younger cousin. And that just wasn't a fit for him. Well, now with his new wife, he's actually doing triage for service animals that basically where they go around and they teach police forces and military and so forth how to do that. So he's outside. He's engaged in sort of an outdoor activity. He's giving back to the community. There's sort of that being of service kind of component. It's amazing and it's wonderful that you have, you know, people like your organization that are guiding these people into not just fitting in, but continuing to be productive and proud of what they are contributing and being of service. It's amazing. We are very, very lucky to have that in this country. A lot of places do not. In your particular case, and I was, you know, you went to Yale.
Yes, sir.
Right?
I did.
Okay. So,
as a matter of fact, to my knowledge, I'm the only member of my graduating class who joined the Army.
Which is where I was going with this. What drew you to the military services?
So, and this was obviously a long time ago. So, and this
because we're all old in this room. Right?
Yeah, and the show is about aging. So I'm grateful to be a guest. But when I graduated from college in 1986. It was at really the height of the Reagan era, the height of the Cold War. And I was a history major at Yale, and I studied American politics and government. And I was impressed that that military service had a huge impact on a whole generation of American leaders in politics and business. And so I think more than anything at the time, I was curious about what it would be like, what it meant to serve your country.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went down to the recruiting office two blocks from the Yale campus, I was surprised to find out I was the first kid to walk in there in years.
And I
walked in and said, hey, I saw some ad, I think it's Sports Illustrated, that said if I have a college degree, I could become an officer. And the recruiter said, you can't just walk in here and think you could do that. And I said, well, can you look it up? And so they had to look it all up.
Right.
And it turns out it's no trivial thing to be accepted at Oscar Kennedy School. But
went
ahead. But what was kind of funny at the time was in 1986, the Vietnam War wasn't that far in the past.
You're correct.
And the Gulf War was still in the future. And
right.
So it was a very different era. And so at my college, during the Vietnam era, they had kicked ROTC and all other kind of trace of the military off campus as part of the political protest. So there was kind of a stigma in joining the military.
Yeah.
So I kind of snuck around as I went through this whole process of getting accepted to this program once they figured out how to do it. And even at graduation, when they read off everybody's what you put you're going to do, a bunch of my friends thought I'd put that down as a prank because I hadn't figured out what I was going to do.
Oh, those kids at Yale.
Oh, yeah.
Those Yalies.
Pranksters. And then the funny thing was once I got into the Army, in many cases, I was kind of impressed that nobody'd heard of Yale, which I thought was kind of refreshing. But for those who had, like my drill sergeant, just thought it was awesome that he had a kid from Yale that he could yell at.
He had been waiting for you for a long time.
Oh, he just thought it was terrific. He said, you know, doesn't that cost a lot of money? I said, yeah, I guess it does. He said, well, what, were you on scholarship? And I said, no. And he said, so your parents paid $100,000, now you're a private, I get to yell at you? And I said, maybe $80,000.
You know, let's not exaggerate.
Exactly. But I thought it was a tremendous experience. So, you know, if you think about the other things you could have done after college, I couldn't be more fortunate.
Now, what did your parents think after paying $80,000 and sending you to Yale? They must have thought you were going to be a Wall Street trader or something else.
Oh, I remember the day I told my dad exactly what I was doing, and he said, and I'd already signed up, but I was kind of trying to work through first kind of getting him oriented, and then I was going to wait a week and tell him I did it.
You're going to sell him in a week.
Yeah, it was like, he'd tell him, Dad, here's what I'm thinking about. Because he said, my father said to me over summer vacation, he said, have you given any thought to what you're going to do after you graduate? Over March vacation, spring vacation. And I said, oh, this is a perfect opportunity because I'd already signed up. And I said, so I'm kind of thinking about joining the Army and going to Oscar Kennedy School. And my dad laughed, and he said, okay, seriously, have you given any thought at all?
Is it Wall Street? Is it Lehman Brothers? Where are you going?
Well, and I'll tell you what, the reason, one of the instigations or one of the things that clarified my thinking was I came home from class at Yale one spring day.
Yeah.
And there was a guy all dressed in a suit. And I remember Jeff, a guy named Jeff. And I said, why are you wearing a suit? It was like, you know, a weekday. He said, well, because the Wall Street banks are on campus this week and they're recruiting. And I said, so what do you do if you work for a Wall Street bank? He said, well, you work like 8 hours a week. And if you do really well, they'll help you get into business school or law school. And so I said, being naive, I said, can't you just go to business school or law school? Why do you have to do that? And he said, oh, what are you going to do? And I said, yeah, I really don't know. And let me think about it. But I thought, I don't want to do that. I mean, I didn't want to do that. So when I told my dad, hey, I'm thinking about doing this, he said, he looked at me and he said, I think that's a terrible idea. And I thought.
What he's really thinking is, I could have saved 80 grand. No, I could have joined up out of it at 18.
I don't know. That was it. So I said, I got kind of defensive because I really had already signed up. And I said, well, why do you think that? And he said, well, let me tell you. It's this simple. You're going to be the guy that when that somebody says, does anybody have any questions? You're going to be just stupid enough to have a question. And he was mostly right, right? But you learn that. And, but the interesting thing was once you get through all those schools, once you get through being treated so badly as part of the kind of the hazing that comes with the test, the military was not only a really rewarding place to work, but it was of all the jobs I've had since, I worked for a bunch of big companies, I worked in government, I've never worked for an organization that took better care of its people or valued its people or developed its people as well as the United States military.
Yeah.
Now, it happens we live in an era where there's, you know, these are difficult times. So when you join the military now, and certainly after 9/11, 2003.
Right. It's a different reality.
We're involved with the world in a different way.
Yeah.
And you wind up in harm's way, and we as a country should be very grateful for those who come serve. But when they come home, we both have an obligation to them, and I think people are reasonably cognizant. But they also have so much talent. All these kids have so much talent, and we could do a lot better as a community in harnessing that talent and connecting them to the next chapter.
You know, Josh, it's funny. You said 86, right? I did hear you right.
Yes.
Okay. You and I are the same. I graduated in 85 with my first undergrad.
No, you're much older than I am.
He looks it.
He actually looks better than me.
Not true.
It must be the military life.
Right.
But people forget that in that period, the only thing that was really kind of a negative, really, was sort of this history and the ghost of Vietnam when it came to the military.
Correct, yeah.
The
yeah.
military was, I mean, if you looked at it pragmatically, in the 80s, the military was as an option, as valid an option to pursue, you know, because it got you. You went in there, especially if you didn't have the financial means. I got a little bit of silver spoon too. I will admit that, right?
And by the way, I want to clarify that was my family's inheritance from my dad's father's liquor store that paid for my college.
Okay. So
there was money there.
So we're borderline Kennedy bootleg. You know?
not quite.
Well, I'm older than you guys. I was there during the Vietnam War and was scared that I was going to be pulled in. If it had lasted a couple more years, I was just a couple years away from.
Well, I'm just you know, for people that were younger and the you know, their reference point for military being military service and just being the military going into the military, it was a completely different reality in the 80s, right, and that we have today. And that's why it's even more impressive that we have actually learned, at least it seems, from our lessons of what we did not do correctly with the veterans returned from Vietnam, and that we are doing
and
things
treated very poorly.
Right. Now, having said that, there's so much more we can still do. You know, from educating people to what the value of the people, you know, the training that people get when they're in the military, the discipline, the
so what's the fear? What holds
the loyalty?
What holds employers back? Just the fact that they don't have the 5 years of sales experience or engineering experience that they're looking for?
What's the hesitation?
Resume? Yeah, what's the hesitation? Is there a fear? And I'll voice it that somehow these people are damaged and are going to.
That's a real consideration, and I think so. That, you know, you have kind of the union. The yang of the popular stereotype of veterans. You know, on the one hand, heroic,
right.
And we're grateful for their service. On the other hand, there's the other side of that coin, especially in popular culture, is the damaged vet.
Right.
You know, is the vet with a bunch of issues.
Who knows when they're going to snap.
Like PTSD, like TBI, and then sort of that, you know, the stereotype of, you know, highly medicated and dependent in some ways. But that, again, I mean, you know, stereotypes are that way because they typically are real. They represent a real population, but it's a small minority. So those employers who don't have direct exposure to good veteran candidates might rely on that stereotype, and that might be a disincentive to proactively pursue finding communities of vets they could consider as candidates. So there have been a bunch of really solid initiatives, including one that was spearheaded by Michelle Obama and Jill Biden, Vice President Biden's wife, the Hire Our Hero initiatives. But the interesting thing about our part of the world, even though we send the most young men and women into the service.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the kinds of employers, especially in Orange County and kind of the greater L.A. area, that set up super well for those kinds of
right to absorb programs. To absorb them when they return.
Yeah.
I mean, you went to officer school where in Georgia?
Yeah, Fort Benning, Georgia.
Fort Benning, Georgia.
Yeah.
Okay, so I when I first started my interior design career, I was in Atlanta for 3 years, and I think you're absolutely correct. There are certain parts of this country which are more wired to have that natural life in engagement with the military, mm-hmm. you know, than we don't hear. But the irony is, what you said earlier in the show, is that we put out the majority of people out of here, but we don't have the systems in place when they come back.
To bring them back in.
To actually absorb them into productive
right.
society.
And I'm trying to be more specific. What kinds of industries would absorb vets back? Is it just defense industries?
No, it's you know, if you just kind of broadly speaking, Fortune
yeah.
500 companies
yeah.
that can, you know, sort of anticipate their hiring needs
yeah.
quarter to quarter, way out in advance, and so and they not only can resource for the, it makes sense for them to
yeah.
get a resource to recruit vets, but you can also see where those companies might have an incentive to partner with the president, to partner
mm-hmm.
with the president's wife, because it's cool. In Orange County, where we have a very different economic landscape, what you have is this incredibly prosperous area, but it's characterized by a lot of small companies.
Right.
In fact,
there's a lot of entrepreneurial,
sure.
smaller government.
And, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
and,
yeah.
And
startups.
So you don't have, typically, you know, you have a company that might be very successful, but they don't have an HR department like Verizon does
right.
or like Home Depot
mm-hmm.
does.
Right.
And they don't really have the facility to say, like, I'm going to need five people in Q3.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hire somebody or have an internal
department. Or maybe even training programs. They're looking for somebody who hit the ground running you've been in sales, in technology sales
right.
for 3 years. You've
right.
been a computer designer for 5 years. You've been a game in the gaming industry.
I'll tell you something. It's interesting. I was at the city council in San Clemente yesterday.
At least you weren't at the jail.
Well, no.
I thought you were.
I know too much on people. I don't think
okay.
But, you know, I told you this before. When I moved back to Southern California and I went out on my own, I happened to be living in San Clemente, and I kind of had this mental idea in my head that, you know, if you're going to live in a community, you're going to live in a community. And so I got engaged into a lot of stuff in nonprofits. And at one point, I think I had to find time to do my job because I was serving on too many boards. Well, currently I'm president of the Historical Society. There, I've been there on their board for about 11 years, and so we had our annual meeting, and then we went up to the city council, and there was some item about historical pavers and sidewalks that we had to make sure was, you know, they didn't do something foolish. There was another presentation, and it was on the Kissimmee watershed pipeline project that they're thinking of bringing water to Southern California or something.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is, in the course of the guy's presentation, where he's talking about, you know, where they're at, what phase is going on, what's next going on, da da da, he made mention of the number of jobs that this actually would provide. And he made mention specifically, now that we're talking about this, it came to mind, of a certain percentage of those jobs are going to be actually veteran jobs.
Hmm. Is that by mandate, or is that by part of it, because it's a government program?
Well, they're going after a lot of grants and stuff. So my question to you is that part now becoming part of sort of a mandate to try to...
It is. And if you think about, as I understand it, if you're talking about, you know, a water project,
yeah.
those are generally fairly sophisticated jobs. So, you know, that's going to entail engineering experience.
Absolutely. They're the rights of way. They're running
right.
pipelines. Yeah.
Right. And so there is a... depending on the scenario, there's either a requirement for some percentage of your position to be filled by veterans, or there are goals.
Right.
And so, you know, then this is an interesting facet of life today. The old kind of manual labor jobs that
mm-hmm.
were stepping stones toward advancement, toward middle class
sure.
success, they're much less common.
Yeah, our society has got to almost phase those out.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so,
or source them out.
Right. And so for a, you know, let's take a 26-year-old kid who served in the military for 5 years or 7 years, you know, to get started, they might have an immense amount of management experience if they were in a leadership position in the military, but they won't have the kind of resume skills to step into a
right.
technical job with an engineering company. And so, you know, there's that question about how do we create pathways so that happens? Because it's a fact that engineering company, these are very sophisticated projects.
Mm-hmm.
Going to war is the most sophisticated of
can't
projects,
think of anything
right? especially
more sophisticated.
If you do it well.
Right.
And so we'd be really well served to figure out how to enroll and enlist those talented people into those jobs. But you have to start them somewhere.
Well, let's do this. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll delve into that specifically.
are like the majority of Americans. You want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
All right, we're back talking about all things veterans here.
I want to take a moment and just recognize Jerry Rosen, and I know
we have a spot from them
that they didn't know we were going to run, but let's go run that.
In gratitude for...
Thank you, Jerry, for introducing Josh to the show, and we look forward to having you here, but we're having a lot of fun with him. So
here we go.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
All right. Shout out to them. Great organization.
Yeah. By the way, before we end the show, I want to talk to you about something I just went through this week that I think may be very cool. It just dawned on me with the clothes and all this stuff that's happening. We'll share that. It might be a good kind of activity for you guys.
We're talking about the challenges of bringing veterans back home and finding careers. They are not as young as we thought. They're in their late 20s, not necessarily early 20s. The majority of them, you said, and they have very...
Paul, that's really young. I'm looking at you and saying that. Okay, yeah.
I'm only 30, Rod.
In your head.
That's the truth. And so we're trying to figure out what we can do to reincorporate these. A certain percentage of them do have real challenges, real problems, you know, caused by being in combat warfare. Those have to be addressed first. But you said the majority of them don't come back damaged like that. There's at least 70% of them that are ready to go to work. What's the time frame of getting reintegrated in society? Do you literally get discharged and take a week off and go hang out and then go get a job, or do you take a month? I don't even know. Do they still get paid for a while?
I'm going to just take a minute here, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so when I went to graduate school, I was idiot at 20 years old, right? I had no clue I was going to graduate school, okay?
Yeah.
I went to the Peter Drucker Center in Claremont, and I was like, what do I do with this stuff?
Right.
And part of it was because I grew up overseas, and you go get all your education out of the way, and then you basically figure out what you want to do with your life,
right?
Okay. But the idea of somebody in their mid-20s approaching a career path, okay, if you took the word military out of it, it's actually very normal. Like, to get that, need that guidance to figure out what you want to do, you know.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing
is they might be delayed because they've done something else for a while.
But they've done something of a lot of value. In fact, they probably have spent a lot more productive time for somebody in their mid-20s than somebody who hasn't been in the military. All I'm trying to do is normalize the situation. We're talking about returning vets. But the way society operates is somebody in their mid-20s also can benefit from some serious guidance of what their career should be, what their strengths are, highlighting what their passions may be, finding that out rather than spend the next 10 years trying to figure it out on your own.
So what time frame do they have to get reintegrated? Do they still get money, or do they immediately get a job the week later?
Well, I mean, if they're fortunate, and there's that question, if we think about our own experience, the first job you got out of school, was it the best job you ever had? Was it a stepping stone toward where you were?
Oh, you mean the 50,000 a year will buy me a lot of beer in the 80s?
Yeah, maybe. Exactly.
Yeah, no, of course not.
It's
a job. And so depending on where you're from, depending on your personal context, you understand that in different ways.
What personal context?
Well, exactly. But the thing to consider is and I think people miss sight of this fact, is take Orange County, a very prosperous place, and people are surprised, and one of you guys was, to hear that we send that many young people into the military.
I didn't think we were.
There is kind of an ethnic and demographic set of attributes to that that it won't surprise you when you think about it.
Right.
It's not the sons and daughters of the wealthy from Orange County.
Right.
It's from the other side of Orange County.
Right.
And for those folks, you know, coming out of high school, the military seems like a good option,
mm-hmm.
an interesting option. But when they come home, they haven't obviously given a lot of thought to civilian work.
Mm-hmm. Right?
They were busy doing other things. And they find themselves in kind of the funny bind where on the one hand, a bunch of old folks like us will thank them for their service, but they're behind their peers in the civilian workforce.
Mm-hmm. They've got 5 years of
experience. That's the delay that Paul was talking about.
Yeah, they're not just in the resume per se, but in that kind of understanding that comes quietly over time about how the world works. So it's a really intimidating thing to come home and have that kind of juxtaposition of everybody has been thanking you and we're appropriately grateful, but very rarely does somebody say, and I'm going to show you how the world works.
Yeah, right.
Right?
So
but if
what
you
time
leave,
frame did they have to get rid
of? You go from an organized living environment to a chaotic, loose,
you got to do it yourself,
defined.
Right. And so it's actually more intimidating than you'd think. So if you're in the military and let's say you serve for 5 years, you probably save a little bit of money up because you knew you were coming home, but that's not a lot of money. It might seem like a lot of money when you're in the military and you don't have to pay for various things. But if you come home to Orange County and you have to figure out where to live, how to pay your bills.
Yeah. Get a
plus,
car. Yeah.
You've got all this pent-up energy because you were away from home for so long. So you got all these fun things you want to do. You know, whatever level of reservoir savings they had, it goes away very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so the USC has a very good program for military social work, the Center for Innovation and Research in Military and Families. And they've done a series of studies on veterans in different areas. And so they did last year a study on Orange County's veterans, and it was kind of a continuation of one they did in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
and they found out, if they asked the question to young vets, what were your housing prospects when you got out to come home? And it turns out virtually every single young vet had none. If you discount, you know, staying with your parents or staying on a friend's couch, almost none of those transition veterans had figured out housing,
wow.
right? Which is, you know, so you're fortunate if you have somebody to stay with. But there's a huge chasm to cross to afford housing in Orange County.
Oh, especially down here.
And kind of the sort of the planning assumption for, you know, what's it take to pay for a one-bedroom apartment in Orange County? It's give or take $28 an hour. And $28 an hour is good work for anybody these days. And it's certainly not likely to be your first job. So that creates a set of challenges. And so that, you know, if you ask how much time do they have, virtually none.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and most of it is what do they think is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
and what typically they think is going to happen is different than what happens. And if you're 25 and you come home to Santa Ana, that's where you're from, you know, you're going to connect with your peers. And,
right.
and so a lot of these guys thought, well, I have a buddy, he's got a great job working somewhere, he'll get me a job. It unfortunately doesn't work that way. And so they only know what their peers know, and what they start to learn is this is really challenging.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question for you, because the different nuances on this particular group of people that have gone through and served, okay, it didn't come from a career army. In most cases, it was reserves, correct?
I mean, for the current
engagements, or the most recent engagements?
No, actually, so to I'll make a distinction. So if you think about how we fought the war, we fought the war using a bunch of resources that people don't associate with active engagement. So the National Guard and the Army Reserves.
Right.
And so there were, you know, that has its own consequence, right? So there's a lot of young men and women who joined the reserves thinking, I'll do this 1 weekend a month and two weeks a year. And they found their unit was deployed not once, not twice, but multiple times. And so a lot of pressures come with that.
Right.
A lot of employment pressures.
You can
lose your place in your career. Even if your employer holds a place, you wind up behind. But typically the veterans I work with are vets who joined as a full-time proposition.
Okay.
And it's kind of classic enlistment. They went down to the recruiting office, kind of like I did, and they joined, and they were tested, and they were given a skill, and they were sent somewhere or multiple places. And when they get out, they're coming home.
Because the reason why I was asking that, Josh, is in the case of those who were reservists, and where, you know, we hear about, well, you know, jobs are held and all this stuff. Is that reality, or is that just what was supposed to happen and didn't happen?
It depends. I mean, it's getting, you know, there's a bunch of law, you know, that federal law that mandates that if you leave for military service, an employer is required to keep your place. But as with many other things, it gets kind of vague. So, you know, what constitutes you know, sort of fair treatment. If you're gone for a year in a small organization, the world moves fast, right? So, and not only that, but when you come home from that intense experience, it's hard to just jump back into where you were. So those are pressures, but they're not, in my experience, it's not the operative problem locally as it relates to vets.
So would you say that the larger group of veterans that are coming back, are more of the career military that are basically now transitioning into more of a, you know, like work?
And I think, you know, again, these young people didn't necessarily join the military as a career, but they joined at a point in their lives where that seemed like a good
they
and productive thing
service,
to do.
To be service.
Well, you know, or frankly, they were recruited.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, and you mentioned kind of that era that you and I both grew up in.
Yeah.
It's funny. So the volunteer military dates back to 1974 when President Nixon changed it. So there was a phase where the military had a really tough time figuring out how to recruit people.
Yep.
But in that time, they've gotten quite good at it. And they do, for the most part, they do right by soldiers when they're in.
Right.
The question is, when you get out,
right,
what's next in your life?
Well, look, just walk us through a particular situation, like of helping somebody, basically.
You give us kind of, I'm still trying to figure out what they go through. So it sounds like they come back kind of ill-prepared and
how do they
not
find
a lot of
you?
Money, and then all of a sudden they realize they're out of money and they got to get a job, and it wasn't so easy as
right. So you know what, Paul, you mentioned they're ill prepared, but as a young person comes home, they do not think of themselves as ill prepared at all. They're just excited to be home.
Right.
Yeah. They're excited for the next chapter in their life, and especially over the last couple of years, they've had a lot of reinforcement that says we as a country are so grateful, and you can see all those ads, and so it sounds like it's all going to work out great. So they come home very optimistic, and money doesn't go, as I mentioned, as far as it would, and so typically, you know, somebody thinks, this is a very typical experience, thinks, well, I'll stay with my folks for a while, and my friend John will help me get a job. It turns out John lost his own job, and he can't help. So they might go to a public agency, like the Employment Development Department or one of the one-stop career centers.
Okay.
In some cases, that's how I would meet them, where if you rent a piece for working wardrobes, good scenario. That's where, in a lot of cases, a young person comes home and just has trouble finding traction, and they wind up in various kinds of trouble, right? So they run out of money.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, as you run out of money, if you had a family, wife, kids, well, those pressures build up, and so you might have some real stresses in your marriage that might lead you to that relationship could break down. And in some of the cases, they may not be homeless as people, you know, sort of typically, you know, sort of picture homeless people, but they will be couch surfing. They will be, you know, in a very volatile situation. And so this is typically when I meet them. It's typically through a referral. This is how they find working wardrobes, through some other referral.
And it's got to be a real come down. I can't imagine. I was never in the military, although I was studied military history for many, many years. I was sort of fascinated with that, but not fascinated enough like you were to actually participate in it. I can't imagine one day let's say you're just a staff sergeant or something, or you're a master sergeant, and you're responsible for a lot of people and a lot of important equipment and important jobs and everything, or you're a young lieutenant or whatever you are, and you've got responsibility for your unit and for men, and you're really doing something very complicated and important, and people's lives depend upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you come home and you're trying to get a job at what, $10 an hour at McDonald's or something?
Yeah, you know, you might. And so a lot of those companies that have taken sort of sign on to these initiatives, some of the jobs they have, it's not their fault. They might be working on the loading dock somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. And so that might be
not real important anymore. Not real.
No.
Nobody's life depends upon it. Not a lot of responsibility or.
Right. And that's a tough transition to make, right? Because we all, whether we realize it or not, are defined to a very real extent by our
jobs, what we do.
You know, by our relationships with other people, with society. And so that's a tough thing to rationalize. And so, you know, a lot of people haven't given it that kind of thought. So they don't know how to then go and represent themselves to a prospective employer as the leader that they were.
Should you guys give them kind of almost like role-playing, simulations?
By the way, that's exactly what Working Wardrobes does in some of their programs.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
they have a series of sort of well-designed programs that take a former military person through that process about, you know, how to present yourself, how to interact with customers, those kinds of things. And it's very useful. My own approach is a little less formulaic. What I'm always struck by, and I think it it sort of harkens back to my own experience, is that these young people are, again, I think they're more talented than they've been led to believe. And so when they put their resume together, if you simply put down the things you did in the military and you were an infantryman, mm-hmm. you run out of creative ways to describe that.
To describe what you did. Yeah.
But if you served for 5-6 years, I guarantee you had a bunch of other responsibilities that actually were relevant to a
sure.
civilian employer. So
right.
in my approach is to work with that veteran and find out what those
to
things are.
To retool the language to describe what they did.
And not only to the language, but
educate the employer. Yeah,
what? And also educate the veteran. Like, what are the skills
right.
you really do
right.
bring? And let's now match those to the things you really do want to do, right? So now if you join the military when you're 18 and the military said you're going to be an 11 alpha infantryman, not likely that when you get out you still want to be some version of that. You want to be something very different. So what you don't want to be is a security guard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those kind
yeah.
of easy jobs you get. But they don't necessarily
know. Or a bouncer
know.
In a bar or something.
Yeah,
yeah right.
Exactly. And so I'll work with them. And again, if they've served for 5-6 years, they've worked on sophisticated projects. They've worked with some technology that you and I would have a tough time mastering. They've worked within systems where they had roles or leadership positions that are really valuable. And so it's figuring out what those skills are and how to represent them and then connecting them to employers for whom those skills would be really interesting.
So it's funny because it's very similar to a lot of us that basically are so close to what we do that sometimes we lose the ability to see what it is that we do and what makes it special or what it is that we contribute because we just do it.
Mm-hmm. How many go back into the military? They feel like, oh my God, I can't do anything
question.
But go back into
so
the military.
So not as many as might like to. I mean, once you're out, it's not so easy to get back in, right?
Because,
okay. you can find a National Guard unit, and sometimes there's full-time positions, but, we have downsized the military across all the branches significantly mm-hmm. over the last couple of years. So when you've gotten out, in a lot of cases, it means because you weren't going to get promoted anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Some others got out because they were done. They did this as an experience or because when they were 18, they did not know.
Transitional, yeah. Right.
Transitional. And so what is more common, actually, is where a young person says, well, I don't know what I can do in the civilian workforce, so I'll go back to school. And the GI Bill, mm-hmm. As of 2008, was re-kind of authored so that it is now – it's a very generous program. And so there are significant benefits that will pay for
to go to school.
But it begs the question: are you ready to go back to school?
Yeah,
is school
right.
the right thing for you?
My wife is a director of admissions at Cal State Long Beach, and it was very shocking for me to hear, but I totally understand it. That at one point she said to me, "It's not everybody that's sort of meant to go to college."
Well,
and
yeah,
so, clearly. You come back and you're going to go to school and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to go do this and da-da-da, and you may not be ready to do that. It may not be the fit for you.
Right.
Let's say you're 28 and everybody else is 19 or something here. It's a different generation. You're in classes with people that are 10 years younger than you are because you went off and did something else.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And now to go back and to be sedentary and sit. When you come out of high school, you're sort of programmed to be in study mode here.
Right.
When you go out in the real world,
yeah, you've shifted your status state of mind. So, how many people do you? I mean, I know your nonprofit's built like 2012.
Yes.
Yeah. So, how many people do you see?
Have you guys been of service?
So, I've probably placed a couple hundred. Mm-hmm. Over 3 years.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and so it's encouraging, but it's a drop in the bucket. So,
I was gonna say, what's the need?
Well, the need's gotten better because the economy's gotten better. The need's gotten kind of less. But where I started, and I think you asked me initially, Red, where I started was I got interested in veteran unemployment after having been out of the military for a long time in about 2012. And it just seemed to me, knowing what I knew about soldiers, that the veteran employment shouldn't be higher than non-veterans.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it should be close to zero
mm-hmm.
if the world were kind of the way it should. And yet it's continually substantially higher among veterans than it is for their non-veterans.
Unemployment.
Even in this very robust economy right now. I mean, Orange County unemployment is below 5% now.
Mm-hmm.
The real facts of veteran unemployment, especially if you account for underemployment, it's still materially much higher.
Wow.
And just because somebody has a job doesn't mean they have the right job, doesn't mean that their skills are...
So give us a number. If Orange County employment's under 5 and we're one of the best in the state,
I would say the real number for veteran employment is... You have to be clear. What we're talking about, that segment of the population that are kind of working age, the young men we're describing now.
Yeah, late 20s, early
30s. It's 20%.
Wow.
At any given time. Right. I mean, if you include underemployment, if you really compare that to what it takes to live in Orange County, it's not great. Just because you have a job doesn't mean you're thriving, and it certainly doesn't mean that job is going to take you somewhere.
So where does the support for your efforts come from, Josh? I mean, how are you funded with your nonprofit? Is it grants? Is it federal funding?
Donations.
So mine is small. Mine is a combination of donations, and I've kind of funded a bunch of it myself, having worked in internet stuff for a while. And I took a deliberate approach. I'm staying deliberately small because I wanted to learn what it, you know, sort of the true nature of the problem. Collectively, you know, often people think, well, there must not be enough organizations helping vets. Maybe that's why vets are unemployed. And I was probably one of those folks who kind of naively thought that. The truth is there is no shortage of nonprofits. There's over 40,000 nonprofits in the United States of America that in some fashion are geared toward helping veterans. In Orange County, there are dozens of organizations that help or aspire to help vets with employment.
Rad mentioned one earlier. This guy
we're not well coordinated. Right? Yeah. I mean, the biggest issue is those groups often aren't working in sync. And so because of that, we still face that problem of connecting employers in a scaled way to veterans, you know, where an employer doesn't want one person that I send them. They want five candidates so they can hire one good one.
Right. So we're almost out of time, but I want to make sure that people know how to get hold of you first and foremost. So why don't you give them your contact info?
So my organization is called Armed Force to Workforce. You can type in armedforcetoworkforce.org or AF2WF.org. We'll take you there. My email contact is josh@AF2WF.org. If you're listening locally, we are in the process of getting ready for a very big event on October 23rd and 24th. It's the Orange County Stand Down. We'd love to have volunteers. That has two components. One is to help older vets who need typically kind of intervention services to get them back on solid footing. And this year we've added another component, which is a career expo. So we'll have somewhere on the order of 80 to 100 employers. But I'd love to put the word out. If you know a veteran, please send them. It's at the Tustin Air Base. You can look up orangecountystanddown.org. Hopefully that will be a good start at connecting employers.
You can send me that stuff too. We'll put it on the Facebook page for the show. I do want to add just one other thing that's going on this week. It's on Sunday and it's down by where I am. There's a marine monument, Park Semper Fi, by the pier, and a gentleman by the name of Wayne Eggleston, who was a former mayor and currently is a planning commissioner, set this thing up about 10 years ago, and it was an unused piece of land. They are celebrating their 10th anniversary on Sunday at 2 o'clock, and you can go to their website, marinemonument.com, for tickets and so forth. But it's just, if people who are listening haven't seen that, you know, you can go basically celebrate the men and women that have served this country.
We got to wrap up. How do they reach you, Rod?
Rod.Gantus@gmail.com, rad.ghantous@gmail.com, or you can call me on my cell anytime, 949-212-8299, just trying to make it before 8 o'clock at night. That's all I ask. And
midnight. He likes
There's more to talk, Josh. You and I, we got more to talk. So I can see us having you back on. And thanks again for the patience for me getting off the freeway.
Nobody noticed. I would not have pointed it out. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Seamless.
It's okay. Making comedy on your one's own expense is something we do well on this show. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you again next Wednesday, same time.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gantos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.